Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
if I had $1 million.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. A little late this morning. I'm Tom Allen, Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 39, NASDAQ futures up 197. We're cheering again a ceasefire. Kind of bizarre. Interesting. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Yeah, good morning.
How are you? We're a little late here, but we're here.
Yeah, you're, that would make you the late Tom Howell.
Well, hopefully not just yet. There have been a couple other in my family. I guess I could be a third. I don't know. What do you got to do to be a third?
Are you Thomas Howell the third? What's your middle initial?
Patrick.
Yeah, middle name. So Thomas Patrick Howell. Are there previous Thomas Patrick Howells?
My dad.
That would make you a junior, unless he was a junior, in which case you would be the third.
Well, here's kind of the odd deal.
You could also skip a generation, and so that would make you that would make you the second. So for example, our late buddy Walt Szymanski. Walt was Walter the second. His father was Walter, but not Walter C. His grandfather was the full name. So Walt was the second, not Junior.
So that's why George Bush the second was not really George Bush Junior. Different middle name.
Oh, the second president. People just refer to him as the second because he was the second of the two presidents. He was George W. His father was George H. W. I don't know if there was a previous George W.
Because the grandfather was Prescott, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was a character.
I think when people refer to George Bush as Bush the second, that's just because he was the second of the two presidents.
Well,
an easy way to say it.
My grandmother, this is even weirder. My grandmother married the original, I think it was Thomas P. Howell, who somehow died in an electrical mishap, like at the stockyards or someplace. Of course, like no workman's comp or anything like that. And they didn't have any kids. And he was real young. I mean, hell, he checked into Mount Olivet Cemetery in 1907. And then years later, like, you know, not 20.
Way to put it, he checked in.
Yeah. But then I'm thinking 4 or 5 years later, she married his brother. And that was my grandfather. So there was a Thomas P. Howell there. But he would have been a great uncle.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that lineage shakes out. What the references are to that. And you know, now you're starting to get way beyond my knowledge of that.
Yeah, I don't.
A little beyond is way beyond.
I couldn't tell you. There are people that are all over this second cousin or first cousin once removed, and I have no idea what all that stuff is.
Yeah, I get how that works. That's easy.
I don't. I'm out on that.
You take my cousins, my first cousins. My kids are my cousins' first cousins once removed.
Oh, okay.
My kids to their kids are second cousins.
All right, you lost me, but that's all right.
Okay. All right. So my cousin Mike is an example. So yeah. my cousin Mike, he and I are cousins.
Yes.
Right? My mother and his father are brother and sister. Okay, so that we're first cousins. My daughter and my son, to Mike, are first cousins once removed.
Oh, okay, all right.
Okay, Mike's kids to my kids are second cousins.
Oh, all right. There you go. Okay.
Yeah, pretty easy when you think about it. You get the construct. It's all right.
All right, so my mother's cousin would be my cousin once removed.
Yes.
All right, fair enough. Well, they're in Columbus, so we moved to Chicago. We did move.
Yeah, you were removed.
Yeah, we were removed. Somewhere, God.
Voluntarily or forcibly?
No, I think it was voluntarily, but
or run out of town.
Yeah. And when there's a huge Italian settlement in Columbus from the area where my grandmother came from, which is not really to be shocking.
When you say the area where your grandmother came from, the part of Italy where your grandmother came from?
Okay. The Abruzzi is the province, and tells the name of the town. I'll think of it. Giulianova is the name of the town. So they have the Sons of Giulianova Club in Columbus, but I think that's the way the immigration worked in those days. You sort of had to have a sponsor. I don't know if the sponsor had a... I don't think the sponsor had to agree necessarily that you were coming to see him, but when you landed at Ellis Island, I think you had to say, I'm going to go live with somebody.
Well, and you also wanted to live, if you're coming across, you didn't speak the language, you had all those barriers, then you certainly wanted to live among people who would be able to look out for you.
Yeah, one of the bizarre stories, and then we'll get down to business, they say. My father's brother died World War II, and somewhere along the line, his Purple Heart got lost. So this lady who does a lot of research, I don't know if she's still alive, and going back on families, she knew a lot about our family. So she contacts my brother Dan. He says, by the way, your uncle's Purple Heart is at this charitable organization that tries to reattach, for lack of a better term, people
reunite,
with...
Reunite, house reunite.
Yeah. Well, if it's a medal, I guess it's reattach. The medal with the family. And so she contacts my brother, and we contact this operation, and they're terrific people, and we end up getting my uncle's Purple Heart. And it turns out, I says, what's the connection between you and the Howe family? And she says, well, that's interesting. Whoever was in her family, they must have come from the same area, County Clare. And when he shows up at Ellis Island, they said, well, where are you going to go stay? And he goes, I'm going to go stay with, I think my grandma's name was Mary. I'm going to go stay with, Mary Howe in Chicago. I don't think they ever checked with her. This is after my grandfather died, I think. So somewhere along the line, he shows up at the house, and she goes, okay, fine. The guy lived there for a couple of years, I guess, worked in the back of the yards and went off on his own. I mean, she's okay. I mean, those houses were so small, I guess, you don't know how they stuffed another person in there, but they did. And she goes, okay. Kind of a different world, huh, Kevin?
Yeah, so it was, he just randomly picked her out, so...
No, I mean, I guess they must have...
He was living with anyhow?
Yeah, but there must have been some sort of connection from the old country. Somebody who came over, he must have known somebody.
Somebody who gave a name.
Yeah, and she goes, hey, I'm Joe from County Clare, I got nowhere to live. Okay, well, we don't really have a spare bedroom, we'll have somebody move over. Okay. Okay, then. I mean, today people build huge houses with guest rooms and never invite anybody over. It's a whole different program, right? And if somebody showed up, they'd never let them in.
Way more house than they ever need.
Oh, God. You know what's interesting, Kevin, is when the first energy thing started, back in the 70s, well, Robin and I were doing remodeling. And we were doing some, I got really interested in some of the architecture and stuff. And the fact that there was a energy crisis going on. Duh. It's not like those ever end. And I wasn't good at it, but I read a couple of books on passive solar. And it is absolutely fascinating how much energy you can save with passive solar systems. It don't cost, we're not talking about, a windmill, we're not talking about electric on the roof, we're talking about just building your home in a way where you retain solar energy. Simple stuff, like in the Chicago, if you build a home, you want basically all your windows facing south. But you don't really want, If your window is X, say in an upstairs bedroom, you got five bedrooms, windows up there, you have to have your eaves at a certain angle out so that in the wintertime when the sun's down, the sun comes in, but in the summertime when the sun's higher, the eaves block it. And inside, if you have a big window facing, you have some kind of a wall. I mean, what do they call it? What's the word, Kevin? We have a big mass, like either a big thing of concrete or a tile floor with concrete, something that will get the sun during the day, warm up, and then generate heat all night. It's very inexpensive. It's very relatively easy to do if somebody knows what the hell they're doing. And it doesn't, doesn't involve people yelling about, you know, saving energy. It doesn't involve about energy, people's, you know, stuff on the roof, collecting this, collecting that, and what are you going to do with the solar panels and the windmills killing birds and all this other crap. And yet it has totally disappeared from anybody's dictionary. And yet every home, if it was built with even a little bit of that in mind, would probably save 20-25% of all their energy. And it's a total lost art. And I never could understand why that is exactly when some of the stuff is so simple to do. There's a couple of schools that are built in Britain that are amazingly energy efficient. If you really want to go whole hog, what you do is your critical mass is black or some real dark color, and you have a thin thing of water that goes over the black with the sun beating on it. Well, in the wintertime, the sun's still warm coming through a window. It'll actually heat the water. You can run it through radiators or wherever and heat your whole house with it without anything other than a pump. And yet, I'm surprised that at least a couple of the stuff, even the eaves being the right length and those kinds of things and having your windows south and not north, none of that stuff has survived to this day, and I really don't know why, because it's the easiest thing to do.
Is it easy, but it isn't? Is it, you know, are builders taking out cost on the construction?
Well, I mean, some of the easiest stuff is how much does it cost you to put your windows on the south side rather than the north side? I mean, it's, you know, some of the stuff is so ridiculously simple that, I mean, how do you not have your eaves at the right length where in the summertime you're not getting baked by the sun, and in the wintertime, you know, I mean, why, how many people have...
Yeah, but here's an example. You know, if you're a builder and you're building out a subdivision, and so you have you know, four models maybe that you and people can choose from them, and then they pick a lot, and you don't want to customize your models any more than you have to. You just want to keep building them. Some of them are going to face south, some of them are going to face north. That's just the way it is. And so you may see, and I'm just speculating, you know, I have no idea if this is the case, but I'm saying I could see a scenario where a builder's just saying, I'm just building it a certain way. That's the way it is. If you want, you know, if you want me to do something different, then you're going to have to pay up a lot, and people weren't willing to pay up a lot.
I get all that. The part that's amazing is it was part of everybody's vernacular back then. And now I wonder if passive solar is even in the dictionary, for God's sake. I mean, how has it so collectively been abandoned, even the little stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, yet it has. And yet nothing could be less controversial than having your eaves up the right way, right? Anyway.
All right.
But we were going back and forth this weekend on people in the portal. And, you know,
yeah, by the way, Bransford is not coming back now. That's, you know, that's fully decided.
Well, where's she going?
Hasn't chosen yet, but she said, you know, moving on to the next chapter now, which probably means that the portal signees, one of the things that you work on with if you're working with the coach and trying to keep your option to return open is, hey, if I fill your spot, I'm going to fill your spot. So, you know, you only get the opportunity to return so long. And because the Notre Dame women signed some people out of the portal, I think that sort of filled the spot.
Well, you know, it's a lot of the stuff we don't intend to talk about it this way on the show, Kevin, but it you know, and one of the reasons why I do the show is not because every story, I guess, can stand on their own, but the real story to me is always the story between the stories. And you watch what's happening with the NIL. And it's essentially a Supreme Court decision that opened a lot of it up. And I don't think the Supreme Court intended, of course, who knows, but where we went here, they basically said a school can't own somebody's name, image, and likeness. And from there, it's, you know, it's sprouted like a weed to God knows every different direction, more like a spider weed. But when you look at the two Supreme Court decisions, on the one hand, you have professional baseball with some totally half-assed decision 100 years ago regarding interstate commerce, where they can have a draft and lock somebody up for life and essentially make that person never play Major League Baseball. They can't market themselves. They can't do anything. I'm not talking about, you know, I will say it, the morons of the world, if I ask you, is there free agency in baseball, immediately say yes. Okay, well, I guess you're technically correct, but out of how many people you think are covered under the Major League Baseball contract, Kevin? Every team has got to have, what, 75 people, 100 people all through the minors?
Well, they have the 40-man roster, so that's, you know, that's...
No, I'm talking about minor leagues. Those are all their people, too.
Yeah, I understand, but they really have control over the 40-man roster.
They have control over everybody down to rookie league.
Varying degrees of control.
Well, the kid in the rookie league for the Cubs can't walk out and play tomorrow for the Yankee rookie league.
No, but he can, and he's probably not going to be inclined to do so anyway. But they have this Rule 5 draft that says I can take anybody who's not on your 40-man roster. I just have to keep them in the majors for a year.
Okay, so that's another...
And lots of people have, lots of teams, especially bad teams, will take advantage of that because they don't worry about that last spot. They're not worried about squeezing out that last win or two to remain in contention.
All right, so we're talking about another... I'm trying to get to the point where... There's a 30. They have 30 rounds, right? And there's 32 teams. It's 900 people every year that are drafted that lose all their freedom for a period of time. Anyway, this is a Supreme Court decision. You know, right? Or it's been.
The draft is actually the and you know I know you don't like hearing this either, but the draft is part of the collective bargaining agreement. And you know, yes, it's a union shop, so they do have the right to negotiate on behalf of people who don't who aren't in the union and who aren't professional baseball players yet. That is a weird an oddity of the of labor law, but you know they do have that option. So that's not part of the antitrust agreement. That's part of the labor agreement.
Well, it is, in my opinion, part of the antitrust agreement, because there was a draft long before there was a collective bargaining agreement, correct?
Yeah, collective bargaining agreements go back to what, the 60s?
Yeah, so I mean we're talking about the greatest line in one of the key lines in the was it the Lou Gehrig story? Was that the name of the movie with Gary Cooper?
Pride of the Yankees.
Pride of the Yankees. And where Walter Brennan says, you're now the property of the New York Yankees? Like forever? So.
Oh, yeah. So that was the case then. It's not the case now.
Well, for somebody who signs, somebody who's drafted, where does he get to go different?
College. That's a big reason why so many...
I'm saying the idea, I mean, I know Lou would fight me on this too, but the day they had collective bargaining, it wasn't an even fight. It was a monopoly against a bunch of schmucks. I mean, that's collective bargaining, but it's not even.
Well, actually, in baseball, the union has generally won everything that they wanted.
They have won stuff for themselves. The minor league stuff hasn't changed at all.
Yeah, I'm not arguing that. As I said, they're negotiating on behalf of. Of people who aren't even professional baseball players yet. However, that's the way it works.
Well,
that's no different than the laborers' union negotiating for people, negotiating rules for people who become laborers at some point.
The fact that it's no different or whatever, or you can trace the history of it, simple fact is somebody gets drafted out of high school. You're right, they could go to college, but then they get drafted again, and they have the same problem. That person has to go play for the Cubs. He's a shortstop. He shows up. The Cubs got five shortstops. one of his buddies says, gee, I'm on the Angels. We don't have any shortstops. He can't, after a year, go. It's not, you're not depriving him of his livelihood. Yet, in college, somebody shows up allegedly to be a student, and after a year feels he's not playing enough, even though he has gotten benefits from this place, has gotten paid for him, got tuition, got a strength coach, got coaching, got all this stuff. Same Supreme Court says, oh, no, you're depriving him of his right to go somewhere else. Now, to me, there's a mismatch there. It's just me.
There is, but that's absent the collective bargaining agreement, because I don't even know who would be, you know, there isn't a union, so you can't bargain. So, you know, there's a lot that we don't like, but there's a lot of technical infrastructure that just doesn't exist in college, and that's what has made it, you know, brought us to where we are today.
I
go back to what I've said all along, is the NCAA is totally responsible for the situation, because they refuse to get out in front of the inevitable. Instead, they tried to fight it at every turn, assumed that they would win, lost repeatedly, and then got caught totally unprepared to deal with the consequences. When if they had gotten out in front of it, they probably could have gotten to a place that everybody would have found acceptable once upon a time. That ship sailed a long time ago.
See, I'm on the economic side. If we both wrote papers, I think mine might win. I think what you're saying, the NCAA, if they had done it properly, could have created a mop monopoly like Major League Baseball. I don't agree with that at all. I think in today's world,
I can't say that you can agree with it.
No, I'm saying I'm not disagreeing with the part they might have tried. I don't think Major League Baseball, if they got together today, could pull it off.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, though, the NCAA could have put together an arrangement that would have been acceptable and would not have been likely to be challenged.
I would agree that they would have said, okay,
you could put that together, get challenged in court, and lose. But I think they could have put together the infrastructure to make it work. I'm not suggesting they do. I think the players should get everything that they can get. I'm totally for that. The arrangement was so skewed the other way for so long that it was usually, you know, it was just unconscionable that they operated the way that they did.
You're talking about college or baseball?
I'm talking about college.
I don't know, there was a guy that sounded just like you when we first started the show, said that before the money got so huge that for most people tuition was pretty much fair pay.
I think it still is for most people. For most people, you can't diminish the value of free college. And for the bit players, I absolutely think that that's really good compensation for a lot of people. And if you think, you know, if you think that the senior offensive lineman who's a reserve and is never going to and has never been a starter at some college is getting a lot of money, he's not. But he is getting a pretty good deal because he's getting a free college degree. I stand by that.
And I think you would agree with me on this. I'm still concerned about the workman's comp stuff in football.
Why they cling to this student athlete model is because then they don't have to worry about workman's comp. And yeah, I think that's going to fall by the wayside.
Well, you know, it's not just them. Back from the club, I still belong to the club, but they don't have a bar anymore. There don't be any lot of people around here, but over the Buckingham, it used to be the Buckingham now, or LaSalle Club, now it's the Buckingham. One of the young ladies who bartended, she and her husband, you know, they gave up their liquor license, Kevin, we're so idiots. But so these guys would come in three or four nights a week. They'd bring the booze, and it was their liquor license they'd serve at the place. Anyway, the guy, real nice guy, and he had his beautiful wife. And I always noticed she kind of looked like she was, you know, walking around like she was stiff or something, not drunk. And it turns out she had, Kevin, she couldn't have been 25. I think she'd had 4 or 5 back surgeries. Beautiful and pleasant girl. She was a frontline cheerleader for some college. And her back doing cheerleading stuff. They didn't pay for any surgeries.
I'm sure they didn't.
So it's not just
activity. They probably gave them a waiver form and some cheap student insurance that didn't cover a lot.
Well, I mean, our buddy Doc is
a form where you could buy cheap student insurance.
Well, my
does
our buddy Doc was
remember those policies we used to get waived in front of us.
Oh yeah. Well, his stepson went to the University of Chicago, and he tore his ACL senior year. And for those that don't necessarily know, you can play with a torn ACL. I mean, you don't have to get it fixed that week so you can come back and play quarterback the next year. It just means that your knee needs a brace because it wants to go forward. It's not being held. And I'm not a doctor, but there's people in the old days, that's why they never, it wasn't, ACL surgery is what, 40 years old, Kevin? In those days, you just had a trick knee and dealt with it the rest of your life. Anyway, so Doc says to him, hey, you're getting the surgery before you get out of there. They're paying for it. I'm not. And because they were more than happy to let him wander off into the sunset. With no story about 8 years from now, if you decide to get it fixed, we'll pay for it.
Because even though they have insurance, the less you use it, the better the rates are. So
yeah, well, I mean, if he'd have said, well, I'm not getting it fixed now, I got a new job, and 5 years from now, he decides, well, it's time to get it fixed. Because a lot of times they take a ligament from somewhere else, so it's not like the ligament in your knee shriveling up and going away is that big of a deal. Again, I'm not a surgeon. And Dak goes, you're getting that fixed before you walk out of here. I'm not paying for it. They're paying for it. And he did, but a lot of little tricks here, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yes, you'd have been interested in being a trader yesterday, Kevin. Obviously the market is going flying around. Well, the direction is because of the amount of money being put in, which is, my theme and all that stuff. But the ups and downs during the day and the front running. One question is, how is it, and even though they're always focusing on oil, which I don't focus on that much. We have a couple of people that might do some oil stuff. But they use the XLE and things, not the oil contract at the CME. But all the stuff I'm getting about front running in the oil is all from the BBC. Why is it here that no site is willing to cite all these trades and say these are all insider trading and they're coming from someplace? Why are people here so damn afraid to say that? BBC yesterday.
Who pays? Who advertises on those on the news outlets?
Well, I think they're afraid of the government too. I mean, anyway, but yesterday. Just that I don't have all the stats in front of me, but I'm sitting here watching. Well, first of all, the president said in the morning that he was not inclined to extend the ceasefire. So the market was up, and all of a sudden it goes down. So we're down most of the day. All of a sudden, within the last 20 minutes, hits the sewer button. Not horrible, but all of a sudden we go down like 200 points. And, it turns out they had just announced advance wasn't going anywhere, and the talks are, you get this information like 2 or 3 minutes later, or at least regular people do. All of a sudden, the minute we close, the market flies up and we pick up 250 NASDAQ points in the futures in maybe 5 minutes. And just after 4 hours of being on Fox News or whatever, saying a ceasefire is not going to be extended, the president extends a ceasefire. This is all in one day, Kevin. I mean, I don't know who's doing it. I don't know if it's information first or somebody's running stuff ahead. But this is, if somebody's doing it, it's friggin' criminal. And what, do I have to look to the BBC to find out? Evidently, I do. I mean, what is going on here? I mean, I don't know. For us, we just, try and, stay as protected as we can and take advantage of it to a certain extent, but it is so obvious that all this stuff is being front-run, and yet are they doing it on purpose, or they don't even know they're doing it? I don't know.
I wouldn't have any indicator about that because I'm I'm not tuned into the markets the same way you are. That's probably a better Russell conversation than it is Kevin conversation.
Well, I mean, because the value of it, you know, we're talking about, and again, this has nothing to do with who happened to be in office, but I think during the Obama and maybe some of the Bush administrations, we went, you know, 12 months without a 1% move in a day. We're talking about 1% move in 10 minutes, three times in one day, all based on information out of Washington. I mean, and I guess the question comes down to, and I don't know the answer to this, and I don't know if you do either. Maybe you do. You know, maybe I'll ask the Pope. He's supposed to know everything. Would you rather have people in office that are too dumb to realize how valuable this stuff is, or people so criminal that they're taking advantage of it? I mean, I don't know which is worse.
I don't know which is worse either. I'm probably not that binary a choice, but okay.
It probably isn't. So anyway, what got into your Cubs?
Well, they're playing good baseball, sort of. They were frustrating last night as I was driving home after class and kept hearing them leave men on third and failing to score with men on third for like four innings a row.
Bags loaded, nobody out to one inning.
Less than two outs, yeah. And then they finally got a run, and that kind of lit them on fire. So, yeah, they're playing good baseball. And, you know, it's really, if you look at it from a manager standpoint, because their bullpen is completely depleted and their starting rotation has been hurt a lot. They're getting Boyd back tonight. But they've sort of cobbled together a pitching staff that's performing well, despite the fact that their best, so many of their best pitchers are out. It's really crazy. Maybe they're catching some teams at the right time, certainly caught the Mets at the right time. So there's a certain amount of that, but by all rights, this team should be, you know, their pitching staff should be getting lit up, and they're not. He's taking guys in and out at the right times. It's really, you look at it from a manager standpoint, and I don't think managers typically are worth a lot of wins and a lot of losses. They probably can lose more games for you than they can actually win. But to me, the manager's job in pro sports is to keep the team focused, and keep them, kind of manage the egos and keep everything pointed in the right direction. But in this case, Council has really done a nice job of, kind of manipulating, working his way. Let me say, navigating is probably the best way. Is navigating a rough situation with his team, with his team's health.
Well, they have one thing going for them is I don't think there's any team in baseball that has the team defense that they do.
Yeah, that's true.
So they're getting an out or two a game.
Not better.
They're getting an out or two a game that really makes a difference. I know when we were playing softball.
The game the other night, they probably had six or seven.
Yeah. Well, when we were playing ball, in a neighborhood league, we had some pretty good athletes. We weren't the best hitters, but we would turn, on average, a double play and a half a game. And most teams didn't turn any. Well, that's two outs a game, three outs a game coming your way. And over the long haul, that makes a huge difference. In that particular game, it may not, if guys crunch eight home runs off me. But it makes a huge difference. And I hear what Ian Happ said the other night about the pinch hit three-run home run. And Happ goes, "It's a great day for a manager when that happens."
yeah, it is.
But it's funny, Kevin. Is I didn't know one of the guys.
And I wasn't even referring to that when I talk about pushing the right buttons, because there is a big luck factor to that. But in terms of taking pictures as far as they can go. And no farther, and having a good sense of that is a real skill that's showing up with Council. And it showed up last year too. If you remember last year, the Cubs bullpen was horrible the first half of the year. They probably were, by the All-Star break, I think they had 20 blown saves and wound up the season with 23 or 24. It just took them a while to get the right order for the bullpen. But once they did, they were pretty good.
Well, the somewhere along the line here about these pitchers, and I'm not saying pitchers didn't, a lot of pitchers always had arm problems, but somehow or another yesterday somebody asked me about some guy in the Cubs, so I dig into the Cubs injury report. God, Kevin, all the way back to the minor leagues, they got to have 4 and 5 guys going under the knife. I mean, the one guy just last week, what's his name? You know, Kate Horton. But that Porter Hodge got operated on this week, and a couple other guys are recovering. And it's, I mean, they have to look in the mirror and say, you know, 25% of the guys we've drafted in our minor league system, is the only way we're going to do this is throw the ball as hard as you possibly can every time? I mean, I don't know that coaching is that good. I mean, it's all the way down to high schools. I'm not saying they're the ones doing it.
Back even farther than that, you get guys at the high school level,
yeah,
and their arms are getting abused. What's his name? Jeff Passan wrote a book called The Arm, which was all about the very subject you're discussing, and had a lot of interesting observations about that. But yeah, every time they draft a pitcher, no matter which team it is, when they draft a pitcher early, I say, oh, has he had his Tommy John surgery yet, or are we going to have to go through that?
Well, I had a
And in some cases, it's going to be, you know, how long ago, because the second one's going to be due sooner or later.
Well, when I had a long time ago, nobody needs to hear the story, but I essentially had a biking accident in Lincoln Park where my finger got pretty messed up, and guy had to do some ligament surgery. And we got, of course, me talking to people, imagine that. So he was telling me all about the Tommy John stuff. And he said, it's actually not much different than what I just did to your finger. He goes, I could do a Tommy John tomorrow. He goes, but I wouldn't, because I don't have the same stuff that the guy in Alabama was the major domo then. Now I guess it's the guy in Texas.
Dr. Joe.
Yeah. And, but he goes, he has an operation down there. He goes, I could work for him tomorrow. He goes, I don't want to. He goes, I like to fix whatever people break. You know, it's skateboarding. I like different people, different stuff. He goes, I'm good at it, and which he was, and he said that you know, his whole shtick was that, you know, whenever he operated on people, he goes he operates on, I don't know what number he said, a week, like 20 or something, from college and high school and all of it. But they had a couple of days, they have it's like a pizza pie thing where he's in the middle with cameras watching all the surgeries, and these other guys are doing the surgeries, maybe guys younger and steadier than him, who knows, but. He goes, he watches them all, and they have an incredible rehab facility, rehab program. They have, wherever city you go to, they have people to do follow-up. He goes, it's all in that. He goes, it's not the surgery necessarily. He goes, but I'll tell you one secret. He goes, the idea that you're better than new, bullshit. So you're never better than new. You know, I suppose if you had a very weak, you know, congenitally weak one to start with, maybe. He said, but the idea that you're better than no, he goes, don't buy that.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
You know, maybe everything gets fixed to where you are.
Damage is cumulative.
Yeah, and he said, but a lot of it, I see some, I mean, the guy who's that Horton guy, when I first saw him pitch, I said, Kevin, this guy should be a lifelong reliever. That's not a starter delivery. He's not even. He's not Nolan Bryan. He's not Greg Maddux. I mean, why don't we have more people? I mean, I bet pitches forever is the guy, Otani. Not Otani. Who's the guy the Cubs have?
Otani?
The guy the Cubs have.
Shota.
Shota, what's his last name?
Naga.
Yeah. He's the guy that he doesn't throw max every time, and he gets people out. I bet he pitches for 15 years.
Yeah, he might.
He's got a great delivery.
Well, he's older though, so he's probably not going to pitch for 15 years. But nevertheless,
well, he's already on his like seventh year, and he looks pretty damn good, doesn't he? How long did he pitch in Japan?
This year he is. Last year he was getting lit up, but that was, you know, he probably never got all the way healthy after surgery.
Yeah, but so anyway, what do you think?
Hey, I want to shift gears on something. I want you to, I'll throw it out because we're getting late in the segment and Russell should be on pretty soon. So this is something I'll throw it out there and we can talk about it more on Friday if you want. I should talk to you about Friday anyway because it's going to be a little dicey for me, but I think I should be fine for my usual time. I've been saying all along that pretty much the centerpiece of U.S. foreign policy has been, you know, sort of blunting China's attempts at gaining more and more influence throughout the world economically. If you want to look at just shipping in the world, there's four main choke points. On the waters for shipping, and one of them was the Panama Canal. And if you remember, way back almost a year ago now, probably about a year ago, the U.S. Got a little more involved in the Panama Canal. The Chinese terminal or the terminal control was by a Hong Kong-based company that Trump had said that kind of Chinese control was unacceptable. The controller audit exposed some irregularities in the contract that they had. The Supreme Court in Panama nullified that contract, and the terminals shifted out of control and was handed off to Maersk and BlackRock and an Italian company as well. So that was one big change, and the U.S. was involved. Then there's the Strait of Malacca in Indonesia. It sits directly, Indonesia's right on the strait. About 2 weeks ago, the U.S. signed a major defense partnership with Indonesia. As it relates to that, the U.S. military aircraft has overflight rights across all of that airspace. No need for approvals, just notification that we're going to do it. And the U.S. has agreed to help Indonesia make sure the strait stays open if necessary.
What does that mean?
Strait of Gibraltar, the third choke point, is Morocco controls the southern shore, which is the Atlantic Mediterranean gateway. And in April, just a few weeks ago, U.S. and Morocco signed an agreement till 2036 for defense cooperation. And covers NATO level weapons, which means, you know, big time weapons, and joint training. So now the U.S. has a presence at Gibraltar, and we know what's going on with the Strait of Hormuz. These are all areas where, if Morocco, 80% of Chinese oil imports travel through there and 40% of its global trade. If you look at Panama, that was obviously Panama had influence. If you look at Gibraltar, not as much for China, but it is a choke point. Strait of Hormuz, we know what's going on with that, and we'll see how it works out, but we know that was important to China as well. And then you pile on top of it Venezuela and the cheap oil deals that China had. I really think China's in the middle of just damn near everything that the U.S. does.
I hope you're right. I don't think you are, but I hope you're right. I think that we've this whole.
If you're saying all of this is just coincidental,
I don't know if it's coincidental, but I also think it's most of it's BS because whoever is going to take over, and we're not going to. We're saying all this, and yet the same token, supposedly a Russian Navy escorted tanker too drove right into Cuba, and we let them. We're totally bogged down over in the Middle East right now.
Yesterday it was right under our nose, Tom. That was what you said. But actually, the U.S. absolutely allowed passage on that. It was with permission. And as Trump said, when asked about it, he said they have to survive. We got to let something in because they have to survive.
Okay, now what? Nobody knows the motivation.
That, by the way, is PBS's reporting. So PBS is not Trump friendly.
But depending on how you, if you take it from the idea that somehow somewhere there's a Solomon running around in the White House, that there is a cohesive moral plan to everything that's happening. If you take that view, you can grasp at those straws. If you don't,
who said moral? Well, I just said cohesive.
Okay, If you think it's all chaos,
as I've said, and someday you'll probably read that National Security Strategy document that they published last year, as I've said all along, if you want to understand what they're doing, you have to read it.
Well, you don't.
You may be totally appalled by it. You may hate it. You may think it's stupid. You may think it's the most brilliant damn thing ever written. But if you want to understand, you probably better read the strategy.
I think we are. The chances of us being able to do anything for anybody in any of those agreements, given how much we're currently weakening ourselves, is non-existent. We don't have the capability. especially as we've pissed off all our normal allies, we don't have the capability of keeping the sea lanes open in Indonesia. What did that thing? You might as well rip it up. What's the difference? We don't have the capability of keeping Gibraltar open. We're screwing around in the Strait of Hormuz. We're not even doing a good job there.
What do you mean they aren't doing a good job there?
Well, is it closed? I closed it. No, I closed it. Anybody think that gets good diplomacy? Fact is, nobody's using it.
I'm not suggesting it is diplomacy, Tom, but is it effective?
I don't. It's closed. It's not effective.
It's not closed. There's a lot of ships getting through. They're just not, nothing bound for, ships bound for Iran aren't getting through. But hell, even this week, a bunch of actually cruise ships decided that they would make a run through to test it. They hugged the shore opposite of Iran to be sure. But Iran claims to have mined it, but nobody knows if they really did or not, because they really haven't had a functioning navy for a while. I mean, militarily, this has been very effective.
What do you mean militarily? The whole world is suffering.
It's not effective. It's just ridiculous.
The fact that our jet fighters managed to drop the bombs that they're supposed to drop, they're amazingly effective. I heard that bullshit in Vietnam forever, too, how great we were doing. At the end of the day, what did we do? Nothing. There doesn't seem to be. This was supposed to be over in a week.
No, it was never going to be. Who said a week?
2 weeks, the president. I'll go back and find it.
The president really said 2 weeks? You go find me that, and I'll
okay, it's been all over the place. Anyway.
I'll admit on Friday that I am wrong, but 2 weeks, baloney. That was never said.
Okay, well, whatever. We have a... All right, why have you for a second, though? What's going on the inflation front? It seems to me it's getting totally out of control. You can tell about it in the stock market. I mean, people are just starting to gag. Yeah, it's not just gasoline.
But the one area of relief that everybody notices is gasoline, and I don't know what you're seeing, but I'm seeing prices in the as low as in the 340s now, when it was over four, and I think the highest I saw yesterday anywhere was 369. That's here. That's the one everybody notices. So if you're talking about what creates political pressure, that's the one that does it. And we are starting to see a little bit of relief. I don't know if it's going to shoot back up. Sort of depends on what happens with negotiations, what happens with the ceasefires and all that kind of stuff. But that's where it stands right now.
Well, if the population, and I'm not saying they aren't, had an ounce of brains collectively, you wouldn't look at the gas pump, you'd look at the diesel price.
The diesel price is still pretty high, but even that's coming down a little bit.
Well, okay, but it comes down to where people are, and we've been talking about this all week, Kevin, where you are on the K recovery. You know, if you're up top, and you own 10,000 shares of Chevron, and it's up, whatever, you really can't bitch about another $20 in the gas tank. But if you don't own any Chevron, it's a different story. And it has to do with, I have a feeling that what we've been, what's the old joke about the straw that broke the camel's back? Or what was it, the one thin mint, sir? Just one thin mint? Remember that on, was that Benny? It wasn't Benny Hill. It was, what was that?
I don't know the reference, so sorry on that.
The big huge fat guy that they kept, they brought him in, he started kept eating, and finally he said, "No, I can't have anything more." And the guy goes, "Just
that's
one."
Monty Python.
Monty Python.
Monty Python. Yeah, he eats a breath mint and he explodes all over the restaurant.
Yeah, he explodes.
Yeah. The big stoner among us remembers that one.
Yeah.
All right.
Just one thin mint, sir. Oh, I couldn't possibly.
As the Shel Silverstein song goes, I got stoned and I missed it.
Okay. Well,
life done. Passed me by.
But I think you're talking about... You're talking about a population now that is in trouble financially, 80% of it, and it's just one thing after another on this. God help with them, healthcare. I was reading the government now anticipates healthcare 6.7% this year, and yet we continue to throw out these CPI numbers that say 2. I mean, I whatever. I guess you can throw them out there all you want. I don't know, Kevin. These numbers seem odd to me, but there was just this contract signed, and I don't know how long they've been fighting over this contract, but they're talking about contract workers at Midway Airport. I don't know what they do. I mean, I assume some are janitors and some, but they claim there's like 6,500 of them, so they must be doing an awful lot of stuff. I mean, I don't know if there are people working in the newsstands and everything else, but they just got a new contract that raises their wage from minimum wage at $15 to $17, and now next year it'll be $18, and after that, it's going to go up with the CPI. And I look at this, and I shook my head, and I go, who in God's name is their attorney? Why would anybody put a wage increase going forward matching up with the CPI? Is the guy a moron or what? Plus, what is $17 an hour is $34,000 a year? What exactly do you do with that in the city of Chicago? What's the average rent here? $2,000? Well, there's 24. I look at these numbers and there's 6,500 people that essentially are at poverty level, damn near. And obviously they show up to work every day and they do. There's some overtime there where they can make a little more. I hope so. But I mean, it's like, we're not even on, these numbers have gotten so, and Larissa, I think, is on this more than anybody, these numbers have gotten so detached that they're not even rational anymore. I mean, when I heard the $17 an hour, I mentioned this the other day, Utter and I went to this breakfast lunch place. It's owned by a Hispanic family now, and God, the food's great. The whole family runs the place, and it's, whenever I can, I stop in, because I just love the people, and by the way, the food's good. But anything decent, a skillet or whatever, $17. So I'm thinking, okay, a guy who works at Midway Airport takes his wife and two kids to a breakfast place, has coffee, no booze, nothing, and his breakfast is pushing 5 hours work. And you compare that with 1978, 1985, and on any kind of relative scale, regardless of what you think of the CPI or whatever, we're not even on the same planet. I mean, Kevin, when you used to work, when you were in summers in college, was your lunch more than 1 hour work? I don't think so. I don't think it was even close, do you? I bet you were making $9 an hour and lunch was $4.
I used to take my lunch, but okay.
but what was a beer? 60 cents, a buck? We're not even on the same planet in terms of those sorts of things. And what you mentioned about the gasoline, I heard some report that the family, D.R. Horton and those kind of places, but all of a sudden they were really down on the month because that's the area of spending that people can drop off. And I mean, this is not like, somebody puts an extra $20 in the tank, it's coming out of someplace, and it's not coming out of savings because some people don't have that much savings, or some people don't. It's just, I think we're kind of at the end of our rope, so I hope it ends pretty quick. I hope the whole thing gets settled in the Middle East, and, if somehow or another it can all end and Iran's less of a problem, my hat's off to these guys. I just hope it does that. Anyway, on Friday we'll talk.
I do too, and, my concern is, the latest announcement that we're going to extend the ceasefire. I remember back when, the Obama administration was negotiating with Iran. It was like Columbo.
Yeah.
It's like there's always one more thing. There's always one more thing. Now, supposedly this request came out of the Pakistanis who were mediating. So, okay, that's fine. They asked if they could extend it a little while longer. That's fine. But at some point, they got to set, if you're going to negotiate, you got to say, no, here's the line. I'm ready to walk away. And you may not like the consequences of walking away. That's negotiating for anything. That's not just a peace agreement type of thing. That's negotiating for any damn thing that you want, is when do you walk away? And I think the Iranians are really, really good at saying one more thing. And we're not even entirely sure. Inside of Iran, you have all these factions going on where you have people saying, no, I'm in charge. No, I'm in charge. So You got to deal with all that too. I think it's gonna take a while to shake out. It's gonna be rocky. They can sign an agreement. It's still gonna get stressed out sometimes. Very much like Pakistan and India last year.
Well, we got an
agreement between them, and for a little while there were still some skirmishes, but they've kind of it's settled down, and hopefully they'd be able to get something that settles into.
Well, let's kick it around on Friday. Let's talk about it on Friday. I also think the Iranians probably wondering who the hell's in charge on our end, Trump or Netanyahu or neither.
I mean, I think you're off base on that one too, but we can talk about that
okay.
Friday.
SP futures up 51.
Yeah, I'll turn it over to my economics professor friends. See you guys.
SP futures up 51. NASDAQ futures up 234. Larissa, you're back. Good for you. Welcome.
Thank you.
We've been talking about inflation so much the last couple of weeks, and I'm like, where the hell is my person with her finger on the pulse of inflation as it affects every man? And there you are.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be back.
I hear you were off like receiving awards like at in Cambridge and places.
Well, just the awards that I make up.
Okay, well, that's all right. You know, by the way, speaking of awards, you know, I dug out, it was somebody wrote this question about when Obama won the Peace Prize, which he actually did win, and he got the money. He donated all of it, I think. And he donated it, $1.5 million, he donated to Fisher House.
Wow.
Which is, you know, which we try and help out here on the show. That has to be their biggest, other than Fisher himself, that has to be their biggest donation. I never knew he did that.
I didn't either.
That's interesting. So what's up? What's up in Larissa world? We'll talk to you for a minute, and then we'll bring Russell in. What are you telling people about what's going on? And gas prices maybe coming back a little bit. The CPI plus other stuff happening. What's your read on all this?
Well, my sister's neighbor just recently put their house up on the market, and this is in the North Shore of Chicago, and I think they had undervalued it. Because all of a sudden they had, six offers, I think, within the first day, sight unseen. So it's an interesting market, and it's a climate. Oh, and before I forget, I promised my dad that I would complain on this program, because this is a hot topic for you. My father is a chemical engineer. He has been working on cars his entire life because when he was growing up, he had said, or he didn't have any money, so he had to fix it himself. And this was back when you could fix a car. He's multiple patents. He's very good. He's rebuilt engines, all of this. And he's now got a Jeep. And one of his light bulbs went out. And the way that the configuration to get to the light bulb was you had to go through the wheel well. And so he couldn't do it. He had to actually take it into the shop. And he said, this is just ridiculous that I have to go to the shop to replace a light bulb in my headlight. And I know that's a hot topic for you because of the way that cars have changed so much with technology that you can't really do a whole lot yourself. But, you know, going back to the economy, how ridiculous is it that you would have to pay so much more just to replace a light bulb on your car? Because it was, I think he said it's like a $2 or $3 light bulb, and now he has to pay, $30 or $40 to have this replaced. And for him, it's not that big of a deal, but for a lot of people, that is a big deal.
Mention to your dad how lucky he is because he could go through the wheel well. Audrey had a Cadillac SUV, I don't know which one it was, and she put a lot of miles on it, so she got something different a year and a half ago. To replace the headlight, you had to take the fender off.
Cadillac. My word.
Yeah. So when she goes, they got to take the fender off, I go, oh, make sure that where they have it off, they replace every bulb there. You don't want to be doing this twice.
No.
But, how insane is it? That's one thing about me always driving, basically pickup trucks. They're designed different. I don't think you could ever get away with that with a pickup truck. I mean, they burn General Motors down. But Jeeps are like that, yeah. I mean, it's There was what somebody, Russell, we had somebody on the show that said their car was older and one of the spark plugs had never been changed. And he said, "How come? Because nobody, you can't get at one. You got to pull the engine or something to get one."
Yeah, I can see that. I'm going to have spark. Well, and I drive a stupidly. I drive a. I'm on the upper end of the K with the car that I drive, and my spark plugs to swap them out is going to be like, I think $1,200.
Oh my Lord.
Yeah, but I'm stupid. So
listen, if
that's my one indulgence. And can I error correct you on air,
yeah,
Chief? Obama did donate all of the Nobel money, but he divided it up among 10 charities.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm saying. But
okay.
So,
I thought you said that he donated it all.
No. I said $1.5 million. Which what's the prize? $4.5 or something, or four?
I thought the prize was like $1 million. I don't know.
No, it's like
I stopped worrying about it because I don't think they talk about me when they're talking about who they're going to give it to.
I think, you know what? Hey, Andrew, while you're sitting there, Google what's the Nobel Peace Prize. I thought it was four or $3.5 or something.
I don't know.
But $1.5 million was one of the biggest ones, and he gave it to Fisher House. I didn't even know we knew anything about Fisher House, but obviously he did.
But he did.
I was mentioning. By the way, Larissa, you is anybody ever accused you of being clairvoyant?
No.
I don't know if you listened to yesterday's show. We talked a lot about the last four houses, maybe three, or condos that Audrey has sold. She's been pretty busy. Every one of them has gone way above. I think the one was listed at 419, and her people paid 460. And the only reason why they got it, because there was another 460, was Audrey's pretty clever. She knew the people wanted to stay there a little longer after the closing, so she put in there, "You can stay here a month rent-free."
Wow.
And that was the difference why she wanted over somebody else. That's why Audrey's good at this stuff. She's pretty clever. The next one, and this is closed, so I guess I can mention it. Some lady, a real estate person from outside the area, listed this place at 419. No, 435 or something. Audrey presented them with a 460 bid. And they said, we're going to wait for the weekend. I think they ended up getting it for 510 or something.
Wow.
But she said, right. A unit near there, another townhome, had just gone for $475, and this one was nicer than the one that went for $475. So she goes, "You can tell what happens when a real estate person from outside the area prices it." But the bottom line is, all this money that you're talking about, and I don't know if you know how close to what you're talking about you are. All this money is from people that have sold another house. Nancy was on Monday, and we were talking about. The wealth bubble, either have a house or you have stock that you maybe got from your dad or you've had forever in your 401k. That group is on the upper slope of the K. I mean, Nancy says there's no way in God's green earth that somebody you and Russell educated 6 years ago has a decent job. They probably maybe have some their student loan, you know, find a significant other. Everybody's happy, to the extent you can be. They're working, too. They've got a little bit of a loan. So this is all happening. And Nancy says there's no way in hell that couple can outbid somebody who bought a house 30 years ago for $150, is selling it for $350, and wants to pay $400 for another one, and just drops another $50,000 on top. But it's not even a fair fight as to where you are in the K who's getting these houses. If that makes any sense.
Well, and I think you also brought up another interesting point. It's also where you are in your life cycle.
Well, I mean, you are, but the embedded inflation over the last 25 years has caused. It's not like nobody who didn't have a huge big job or wasn't an attorney at, you know, schmo, a regular person, if you. Put your money in a 401k and over the last 25 years, and you just bought a regular house, especially if you had a decent and paid the thing off, you're kind of okay with this because the inflation has run with you, unbeknownst to you, maybe, but it has. But if you didn't, if you've rented this whole time or something, God love you. How do you pay $450 for a house cash?
You don't.
Yeah, you mean you don't.
I
mean,
you know, it's funny, Larissa and I have not talked about this, but the house that basically a comparable house to the one that we sold back in December out in the Clarendon Hills area just sold at a much higher price than we got for ours. And my wife is convinced that it's not as nice of a house. And my wife just made her Stocks and Jocks debut in the background yelling it's not.
Well,
but it mirrors what I mean. Yeah, the Hinsdale Clarendon Hills area is kind of like parts of the North Shore, and it just mirrors exactly what Larissa was saying about her sister's neighbor putting the house up for sale, and you know, there being a lot more demand for higher end homes than supply right now.
Well, Nancy was saying in this area. We were talking about the rates, and if the rate comes down, you know, 7 to 6, and she says that's all changed. I mean, that's a key number. The first question she asked now, Nancy does mortgages, Larissa. The first question I ask now is, where's the house? Because the difference in tax rates, the taxes now is Maria Pappas, who is the what is she? She's the something Cook County, whatever. I don't know what she is, but. Basically blurted out, which I never thought anybody would admit, for the last 30 years, property taxes in Illinois have gone up double the rate of inflation. So Nancy's like, the first question now is, where are you? What are the taxes? And the second question almost is, what's the insurance? Right. So whether you're paying $6,000 or $12,000 in taxes is more of a problem now than if the rate's 7 or 6.8.
Sure.
What the... When, if ever, does this match up, Larissa? I mean, can you see a way sort of out of this? I mean, obviously in 29, it happened with a collapse in asset values, which I don't think anybody wants to see. But I don't know that it could continue to be separate for so long. Can you, or what do you think?
Well, I also think part of the reason why people are so willing to pay up for these exclusive neighborhoods and areas is the school districts. So if we're in an environment where the schools in one area are just that much better or preferred, people are willing to pay that premium in housing price as well as those taxes, because both the areas that Russell we're talking about and the areas that I was talking about, these have excellent, some of the best schools in the Chicagoland area, and that makes them so much more desirable. So those people who have means and income to be able to get into those areas are going to push that demand up even further. So I think what it's really doing is creating a larger divide between two groups of people within the economy, those who have the means. And I think part of the problem then becomes, if you're willing to pay off your taxes to get those better schools, and unless there's a secondary school or another school that is comparable or maybe not as good but similar in quality, you're not going to be able to diversify away that singular location.
Well, God help you if your kids have to go to private school. That's another $20,000 a year per kid, right?
20?
Is it that high?
20. Well, remember I brought up my buddy from college that his son was going to a private school in Nashville for football? That was 41.
For high school?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow, because I think...
Honey, how much was Bennett? Bennett was only 14.5. Sorry.
I say Montgomery's like 16.
Yeah,
but I think Maris is Maris
Montgomery
like
Bell in Nashville, where you know, where Taylor Swift's kids someday will probably go. That one's in the 40s.
Word.
And that's not I mean, that's, you know, there are schools like that everywhere.
Do you think Kelsey's going to be the father?
I don't know. They'll probably adopt.
Okay.
You know, because that infringes on your career, et cetera. So
amazing how family life and being pregnant and taking care of kids infringes on stuff.
It does. It gets in the way.
You can imagine those little kids.
I don't know. You know, I'm glad that I never got knocked up.
Well, I can say that it definitely slowed down my career. Loved every minute
but
of
now,
it.
But now you're back on track.
Now I'm back on
you're
track.
You're big did, time on it, track.
It slowed things down. Yeah. You're not able to do as much overtime. You're not able to go necessarily to all the meetings. There are some challenges with being mm-hmm. pregnant. And then, you know, you actually have to take time off to have the baby.
Yeah, you can't really do that in a classroom.
Nope.
But you know what? I prefer to say that being a mom is a serious career. So doing both of them, it's not like you have two careers. It's not like you have one.
I mean, right, but professionally, I did not progress as quickly as some of my male counterparties.
Well, that's probably true. But if you bring a couple kids into the world that are going to be a credit to the community, I think that's quite a job.
Oh, I'm very pleased with my choices.
Yeah, I mean,
no disappointment. But it to Russell's point, it does make things more difficult. I have some professional friends who are women, and their careers definitely took a step backwards when they started having babies. Now most of my friends, our kids are like 5, 6, you know, up to 10, and now we're able to get much more integrated into the workforce, so a lot of that's been corrected. But relative to some of their husbands, their careers, my girlfriend's careers, have not progressed as quickly.
Well, it's a time. How old do you think you have to be as a kid to realize what a pain in the ass you really are to your parents? You got to be like an adult before you figure that out, or what?
I'd say 35.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, just about now.
You're like, oh, God, yeah. My parents were pretty good. God, was I a pain in the ass. I mean, every kid at some point has to come, or every person has to come to that realization. But then again, they were, you know, your parents were pain in the ass to their parents too. So I guess it's payback, right? That's one way of looking at it.
Yeah. Well, that's I'm just saw Jenna Bush out of the corner of my eye with the TV on here, and I recall when the Bush twins ditched their Secret Service escorts a couple of times, and somebody asked Barbara Bush about it, you know, W's mom, and she said, well, I think it's just a little payback for the way he behaved. So it does. I was like that. I said, what do you think about how your granddaughters are behaving at college? You said, well, I think it's just payback for the way he behaved. So I just kind of like that. I do think there's a circle of all of that. I remember my sister asking my father. And keep in mind, my sister and I both in high school probably had run-ins with the law. We were, you know, we were like, no, you can't hang out with that kid. We were that family. And my dad actually said he was kind of disappointed at how boring we were.
God.
And then he proceeded to talk about how he had blown up the chemistry lab at high school. So I guess we were dull.
I told you my story. When I went to next half hour, we're going to talk all markets in the economy. One of my schools that I was Chicago Public Schools, that I was a janitor during the summer and on breaks, it basically got me through college in terms of my spending money anyway. I was at South Shore High School, and the head janitor, this big black guy, nicest dude on earth, Ellie Walker. And he's in there, he's kind of bummed out one day, and I go, Ellie, what's going on? He goes, ah, it's my kid. And I go, why, what's going on? He goes, well, he thinks he's being slick. You know? He goes, everybody, you know, every kid thinks he's being slick. And he goes, first of all, he's being an ass by trying to be so slick. He goes, but I'm really disappointed how bad he is at it. He goes, I was way better and more imaginative. He's so bad at it, I can tell what he's doing right away.
That's funny. Yeah, Luke tried to. Luke,
he goes, at least if he was good at it, I could be proud of him. He's terrible at it. He goes, what does that say about your kid, Larissa?
Yeah, I should say. So Luke got in trouble with me, and he really wanted to get something for himself from Five Below. And he's learning how to be emotionally manipulative at such a young age. So he runs into the store and he starts looking for anything that he can find that's Michael Jordan, because I'm such a big Michael Jordan fan. And he finds it for me and he says, "Mama, I want to get you this Michael Jordan poster." And he looks at me with these big eyes of like, "Please forgive me." I was like, "Okay, kid, you have won. We will get the poster and you can get a toy. You are all good."
Now, is it these posters of him playing basketball in front of a NASDAQ car or a NASCAR?
These are basketball posters.
Because now he's all into this NASCAR.
I know. We haven't found one of those yet.
Yeah, his team is what, like won 5 races this year or something? Mm-hmm. Of course, he has like...
I think his team won that championship last year.
They won.
Yeah, he won last year.
Yeah.
He has like four guys in each race. I mean, it's...
That's how the teams work, actually.
Is that... I don't know much about that. I know Dr. J's group sponsored a guy for a while.
They sponsored in the tier below. Not the main tier, but yeah.
Well, didn't one of them sell out? One of the whole tiers sell to somebody a couple of years ago? It wasn't that, but one of the levels, didn't they sell to a private investor or something?
Oh no! What they did at the highest level is it used to be there's this whole independent thing where you showed up, you know, you entered a race, and if you were in the top 35 of teams, you automatically got into the race. You didn't have to qualify, and then there were spots for other people to qualify. And I think the way that they've been thinking about reformulating it, and I don't know how it ended up working itself out, because I know Jordan was suing them over this, but they were going to go from just having people show up and try to qualify for the race to basically having franchises like Major League Baseball. And I really don't know how that ended up working itself out.
Okay. Well, what do you say?
If the starting grid is 43, they were going to sell 43 team memberships. So there.
Wow. What do you say we go to break? We come back. Let's since I haven't had you for a week or two, Larissa, I want to tell you what I've come across on the inflation front. And obviously, we're seeing the market going up, except for the last couple of days, which were little blips, pretty much every day. And you can see kind of where the market is landing. And we have Hal, who's one of these days. I wish he'd present some of him, I'm sure he would present some of his latest stuff to you guys, because he's getting more and more focused on the banking laws and the way the money is, not just the money supply is growing, but the way it's growing and who gets to access it. It's not equal access. He's putting a whole different level on top of me just looking at M2. He's saying it's not just M2, it's who can get it. And that is why you're seeing the separation in wealth to this extent. And it's pretty complicated. We'll go back. Let's talk about that. SP Futures up 47. NASDAQ Futures up 228. Be right back with some serious economics. Be ready, Stocks and Jocks.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it. You could junk it. Or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-639-8620. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It'll be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car. And as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-639-8620. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-639-8620. That's 1-800-639-8620.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and OPEC, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen, Andrew on the board. SP Futures up to 47. NASDAQ Futures up 226. Again, great goings on last night on the close, with market flying down with peace talks being canceled and flying right back up 10 minutes later with Trump saying he's going to extend a ceasefire, which he said early in the day he wasn't going to do. So depending on your view of all this, I'll just say it's somewhat unusual and maybe not all that welcome in the market, in my idea of a market. Anyway, we're in Europe. We've got the DAX up 9, so call that flat. FTSE up 7, call that flat. CAC around down 15.2%, so Europe is amazingly quiet with all this stuff going on, or not going on. Nikkei up 236.4%, Hang Seng down 324. It's 1.2%. It's kind of interesting. Shanghai up 21.5%. A record high on the Nikkei in mixed Asia trading as Trump extends Iran's ceasefire. Bonds down 2 basis points, 4.27. The Bund up down 1 basis point, 2.99. We have the 30-year index is right hanging in here at 4.99. So you're not seeing mortgage rates coming down here at all, but they're also not going up. Japan unchanged, 2.40. Oil is actually up 41 cents, 90.08. Brent up 61 cents, 99.09. RBOB at 321. So depending on what state you're in, add something to that, $1.10, $1.30, $1.40, depending on taxes, when you're going to see gas at the pump somewhere in the 430 to 450 range, which is about, I think, where it is most places. And maybe not everybody's like Illinois where the gas tax is a full dollar, but again, use the calculation from your state. Gold up $50, 47.69, again, below the highs of 5,100. Silver up $1.50, 77.99. Foreign exchange, dollar steady. The euro's at 117.2. It's been steady now for a few days. British pound, basically 135. So that's where it's been. Crypto, up 2,900, 78,255. Why that's really, I have no idea. But then again, it's out of my pay grade. I don't know what that all is. But Andrew, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, Cubs win.
Yes, they do. It is 7:35 here in Chicago, Wednesday, April 22nd. The Cubs won over the Phillies 7-4, and the Sox won as well over the Rays 11-5. For Chicago weather, it's currently 65 degrees. We're going to stay that way with a high of 65. It's going to be cooler throughout the day with a little bit of clouds. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 70 degrees. They're going to have a high of 89. Their skies are going to be partly sunny, and they have a higher chance of bushfires due to low humidity. For Chicago traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose is going to take you 30 minutes. Eden's from Lake Cook is going to take you 47. Eisenhower from Wolf is going to take you 43. Dan Ryan from 95th is going to take you 30. And the Stevenson from I-294 is going to take you 44 minutes. And then finally, going back way earlier to your question about the Obama Nobel Peace Prize, total was about $1.4 million, and he donated $2,500,000 to the Fisher House Foundation. And that being said, I couldn't find our little new commercial we have advertising the Friends of Fisher House here in Illinois, so just giving them a quick shout-out as well.
Yeah, we're having the benefit on May 8th.
Yes.
And also for the month of May, if you buy Revolution beer, which I guess is anti-hero, they're going to, even in the store, they're going to kick some money to the veterans. So evidently the guy who runs Revolution Brewery is a veteran, and he hires, I don't know, all veterans, but he hires as many as he can, from what I understand. But I'll find out more on the 8th. But Russell, are you going to be able to take a few weeks off of your job, you and me?
Where are we going?
Well, let's see. The Bulls.
How do I pack?
The Bulls fired
private jet you're picking me up in?
Oh, they got dough. They can do that. Bulls fired their vice president of basketball. They fired their general manager, and now the coach has left. I'm thinking they're going to need us as a consultant to do like the draft and stuff. We ready?
They need. I think I'm going to stay at the job that I'm at right now.
I think I will, too. Although
I don't think there's a whole lot of job security working for that organization.
Well, if it's the right amount.
Well, and I don't know. I don't, if they give me a year sabbatical, because I think that's about how long I would last in one of those jobs.
Well, I was thinking of like a couple of months.
Yeah.
You know, we'd be gone.
Well, I could pocket a couple of nice paychecks and steal it. And you know, I had a buddy back in the day that was, you know, I grew up in Memphis, and he was a security guard at Graceland. And a couple of times a week, he would walk out with one of Elvis's pieces of clothing.
Which ones? When he was skinny or fat?
Fat.
Oh.
Sorry, Chris, if you're listening. but he would do that. But my point is, I would take that job for a couple of months and try to steal as much Jordan swag as possible for Larissa as I could.
Well, you're not paying me tickets. You got to pay me in cash. I'm not getting paid in tickets.
You know, but among the three of us, only one of us has actually tried to get a job with the Bulls.
Really?
I did. I tried to get a job with the Bulls.
What was the job?
Sorry, Larissa.
I tried to be a lovable.
Really? I'm surprised you didn't become one if you wanted to be one.
Oh, the young ladies that they selected out of my group were substantially more talented than I was. I might have had more enthusiasm for the Chicago Bulls, but when it came to actual dancing and the choreography and the skills necessary, these young ladies that they selected were much more talented.
Were they like former cheerleaders and stuff?
One was a former trapeze artist.
Wow.
So, again, couldn't really compete with that.
No.
But I thoroughly enjoyed the audition. I thoroughly enjoyed being in the court. I thoroughly enjoyed getting my picture taken with the statue. And they took us into the locker rooms while we were waiting to go out for our audition. So I enjoyed all of it. A great experience. But, yes, I did try to get a job with the Chicago Bulls.
Oh. I got an interesting... Before we dig into the inflation stuff, my friend Robin, one of her friends, went to Northwestern just a long time ago. I mean, went to Northwestern Journalism School, one of the first ladies, I think, to graduate there. And when she graduated, of course, there weren't a whole lot of jobs for women, right? So she ended up being a member of the, I don't think you do, there was a radio station in Chicago, it was the All Girls Disc Jockey Network. What everybody was on there was ladies because they couldn't get jobs everywhere else. So some lady bought it and said, screw it, I'm only hiring ladies. And it was really good. It was great music. Girls were terrific. And she worked there for a while. And then she became the news person for Fire Radio, which is now 105.9, I think, is what the BBM bought. But they were a news station with rock. And so one day, whoever the guy was who was doing the sports stuff, he wasn't there, so they sent her off to cover the Bulls. And it was just at that period of time where there was great goings on where the ladies were saying, this is bad because the girls can't go in the guys' locker room. And so finally they said, okay, the women reporters, this is before they had partitions and stuff, because guys would just walk in there and guys are walking around naked, right, which was locker room etiquette in those days. So the girls said, wait a minute, we can't compete if we don't be able to go in the locker room. So this girl is maybe 5 foot on a good day. So she goes into the locker room, and all these guys are like 7 feet. So she calls Robin, and she goes, wow, I'm used to seeing naked guys, but I'm not used to seeing stuff at like eye level. She goes, it's kind of hard not to look when people are walking by and are like eye level.
Right.
But anyway, I don't know how that is anymore, because I don't think anybody can really get in the locker room when people only close them. In those days, you did. Anyway, Larissa, what I was dying to talk to you about, I mean, and Russell too, is I've been doing my inflation stuff as usual, and I noticed what's blowing up on M2. You know, we're at like an 11% pace if you take the last couple months, which is not Chairman Powell fighting inflation. Sorry, Chairman. And I look at the Fed balance sheet, which is, you know, somewhat of it. There's got to be a multiplier effect on that and everything that maybe Russell could figure out or hell, but I can't. But there's a huge... In the last 7 weeks since the war has started, the balance sheet, instead of going down a little bit, is now shot up, pushing $100 billion. And the CPI, and I'm surprised, the number that the press picks up, CPI actually gives you their idea of the real number. There's the unadjusted number per month, and then there's the adjusted number. Well, last month, the adjusted number, I think, was 0.4. The real number was 1. So if you take the last 3 months unadjusted, you got 1, you got 0.5, 0.4. So you're talking 2.9 divided by 3 gets you, 1.9 divided by 3 gets you roughly 6.5% if you annualize it. Not 2, not 2.5, not 3. So these numbers are exploding like all around, and I think by the way, the stock market, which I often wondered and really was foolish for a decade when this was happening by not just being longer for everybody, Hal's convinced that an appreciable amount of this money, not just a little bit, heads into the prices of ball teams, the stock market, and so forth. Because it's you can borrow on margin, you know, for 5 or 6% most places, and borrow stuff. You can't, if you got to use your credit card to remodel your house, you're paying 25. So Hal's convinced that who can access the money? It's not just an even playing field, even less even than I ever thought it was in my whole career. So how do you put all this together? Where do we end here? Are we going to have an actual inflation rate of like 20 or something? Are we going to totally bury the population? And Milton Friedman's famous quote was, inflation is the cruelest tax of all. How do you put all this together if you were given a class? Would you say my numbers are wrong, or I'm smoking the bad weed, or how would you put this together?
I think there's quite a bit, as you pointed out, moving parts here. And I think, especially given the asset, I think we're headed towards a asset bubble within the stock market. And that's part of what's creeping into the inflation. I think we're in a situation where it will be, hopefully, when the correction comes, it won't be catastrophic. But you know, this people's spending and the demand for certain assets, like the demand for stocks, the demand for these houses in specific areas, are being pushed up so much. And there's not necessarily that real asset value behind it, and that's what starts to cause those bubbles. And to your point of, I think the younger generations, and this is why I think it's important to not only discuss that there's the K, but really to discuss your life cycle. My students, because I'm teaching a personal finance class this semester, my students don't believe they will ever own a home. And so what they're doing is they're essentially giving up on this dream. It's not even something that they contemplate or think about. And it's interesting, younger generations spending on things are very different. So younger generations will spend more money on experiences or spend more money on different products, and these would be products that I wouldn't necessarily spend money on, but these are, let's say, and I'm going to pick on women because this is just a topic I know a little bit better, beauty products. So younger generation has this idea that, you know, if they know about a specific product, that gives them the feeling of a specific type of currency, the currency of knowledge of these products. And they will drop $50, $100 here and there for different things. For, I think one of my girlfriends, their student, a much younger student, has these facial masks. Well, I looked at how much they cost, and they're $50 a pop. And I said, how are you affording this? Because I personally wouldn't be able to pay this much money. And they're very flippant about how they're paying for it. And I finally understood they're not saving. They don't have this deep desire to try to save for the future. They have low expectations of getting married and having children. Again, even lower expectations of owning a house. They're also in an environment where everything is based on a subscription. So no longer are they buying products straight out. And to your point about where things are going, if we have a group of people who own all the physical real assets, and you could even, in this point, throw in a stock, something along those lines, you've got another group of people coming up who are in the bottom half of the K and don't feel that they could ever get to the top of the half of the K and are spending their money, just they're in a very discretionary way on these types of experiences, they never could get to the top of the cave because they're essentially shooting themselves in the foot by spending their money on these types of things. And I think that's a generational thought process that I'm just learning about. I think it's not necessarily good for our long-term economy, and it's going to have quite a bit of a shift in how people think about buying, saving, and investing for the future. People are no longer thinking about smoothing consumption. So we have credit today. You buy stocks and margin. You can get money for your car. You can get money to go to school. And then you take away future earnings. So you're lowering the amount of consumption that you have in the next period by gaining more consumption in this period. And younger people are not doing that. They're not necessarily taking out as much credit, but they don't have those aspirations for those things. So they're doing things, again, and again, as somebody who's more middle-aged, I wouldn't necessarily spend my money that way. But well, this is what they're doing.
The first I encountered that sort of reasoning, I don't know how many years ago it was, before COVID, one of the ladies that helped us out with the morning, which was before Angelica, Maddie from Loyola, M-A-D-D-I-E. So we had girl Maddie and guy Maddie. Nice lady. Came in always on time, attractive, did a great job, and she's a senior in Loyola. And she was going on spring break with one of her friends or something, and I said, well, that's kind of cool. And I'm thinking, of course, they're going, like, you know, someplace nice like Mexico. I mean, I never did anything like that. And she goes, yeah, one of my friends was just home, and her dad had the birds and the bees meeting. And I'm going, wait a minute, here's an old guy with a young girl in a car driving in the morning in the dark. How inappropriate is it for me to hear this story? So she must have figured out what I was thinking. She goes, oh, I don't mean that. We've all figured that out. And I'm thinking, well, that's good. I didn't need my advice on that. She goes, the guy sat down with her student loans and said, and she's going to be a teacher. It says, you're going to be whole by the time you're 41.
Whew.
And I said, well, but she's gone on break. I mean, I would have, you know, I came home and worked the school board on break until my senior year. I finally went to Florida. We drove and spent like nothing. And she goes, oh, what's the difference, 41 or March of 42 year? What's the difference, 41 and 41 in 3 months? And I never even dreamed of anybody having that kind of mentality, but the goal was so far away. It's like, you know, if you had a big weekend and you put on 2 pounds, it's easy to get rid of it. If you're 100 pounds overweight, it's a whole different program, right? It's really hard to starve yourself a week and only be 98 pounds overweight. You know, it's a, you know, you're right. It's a totally different mentality, and it was so much rooted. I was mentioning the people at Midway Airport. Well, when people made 35 grand at Pullman back when I was there on the line, you know, maybe I had to work a little overtime to get it, a house was 45 to 50. I mean, not a palace, but a house. A new Oldsmobile was 3,500. So a car was essentially a tenth of a year's salary. House was 1.5 to 2 times a year's salary. A Notre Dame education was, you know, a tenth of a year's salary, maybe a ninth of a year's salary. We're not even, the CPI, if you look at it under those terms, guys, it's horrifying. I mean, now what, this is a car for these people is what, 2 times a year's salary. A house is 12. It's not even the same life, is it?
No.
No.
But how does this, mm-hmm. does it ever come together without being volatile? Russell, I don't want to see another 1929, but I don't see somebody coming into the Fed and saying, look, we've been screwing this up for 25 years. We're going to cut back to a 1.5% money supply growth, and you're just going to have to deal with it. Because that's what we have to do now, or 1.5 or 2, whatever the population is growing or whatever. I don't see that happening, and yet I did some stupid research. 1929, a Ford Model A was $400 and a Duesenberg was $12,000. We're sort of getting to that spot, aren't we?
Very much so. And, you know, I'm thinking 1789, not 1929.
Really?
I'm thinking French Revolution type stuff.
Oh, God. You and Carl been having drinks together?
No, but, you know, eventually, you know, if there's 5% of people that are living comfortably and 95% that aren't, it does not end well for the 5%.
Well, plus the attitude is they think they deserve it.
What, the 95%?
The 5%.
5%? Well, some of them do.
Well, what?
I worked my butt. You do too.
Well, I'm talking about.
You deserve a comfortable life. You work your ass off. Geez, you get up at the crevice of dawn every day and head down to the loop. You deserve. I mean, you do deserve a comfortable life because you've worked very hard for it.
Well, I have a very unique personality, Russell, in that
I know
I do this in such a way. The idea that I get to talk to people like you. And still,
you
and still be,
what you do.
And still
you
be messing around with stuff that matters.
Yeah.
When a lot of my friends are retired, I can't. Those guys, as much as I love them, to me, they seems like they got a lobotomy or something. I mean, this is
that's funny. You know, the gentleman that we refer to that likes to spout out the what are you guys going to do about Taiwan to the Chinese?
Yeah.
I was telling him about somebody that had retired at 39 and was in their 70s, and he goes, "Oh my God, that must be an interesting guy."
Well, some people jump on.
I know what you're saying is if you retire and you're not being forced to use your brain like you used to, it can start to slide on you a bit.
Well, but I have never since I've done this, other than when I worked at Pullman. When there were a lot of just a boatload of brilliant guys there that you could, and a couple ladies that you could bounce stuff off every day. I mean, I loved it because I never sat at my desk. I was always off somewhere, and everybody thought I was doing something right, which I was, I guess. But I mean, the collection of people we have on the show that I get to talk to every morning is, to me, it's like, you know, it's like cocaine, for God's sake. I mean, I love it. I mean, where else would I get to talk to somebody like Larissa, I mean, a professor from Purdue. I mean, you I knew from, you know, being on the floor and stuff, but even so, we never had a chance to really talk and share ideas until we did this.
No, not like this. No.
So again, Tom, what separates you, though, from the people, and I think this is what Russell's really trying to get at, is you get up every single day, and it's great that you enjoy your job. It's absolutely wonderful that you do, but you make it happen. You don't look to somebody else to ask you to do it. You make sure that this gets done, and there are days, and I'm sure, that you get up and you're tired and you don't want to come in, and you still come in, you still get the job done, you don't slack, you didn't go to Mexico on vacation, you went and worked so that you could pay down some of your student debt, and that type of mentality is changing.
Well, how much of it, we got a few minutes. How much of it is, you know, when I went to the, I mean, Russell knows. I mean, Russell, I don't think you ever actually had a badge, but no matter how bad your week was going, the next day in the market could be your day. You know, it's like, you know, if you're playing softball, one more time at bat, this could be the home run. This could be the 3-run homer that turns this bus around. There was always this anticipation that tomorrow could be a better day, and that's what I'm really. If you're ever in town, maybe on a Thursday night, because that's when we get younger guys pile in over at the series. Listen, Russell, these guys are all working, you know, they're all in the industry, but they're all working reg. They see themselves being in reg when they're 60, and they're 25. Yeah. There's no thought of learning how to trade, becoming a trader, having some people working for you, having your own business. That entrepreneurial spirit is nowhere.
I know that I've told this one on here before, but it's so relevant. And this was a decade ago before COVID, but I was on the L one day, and a couple of guys that I guess had known each other in college bumped into each other and started talking about, you know, their jobs, and all I couldn't figure out what they did job wise because all they talked about were the benefits and how much time they got off.
Wow.
That was it. It wasn't,
yeah, I'm an assistant portfolio manager and I'm learning this and I'm learning that. No, it was, you know, I got 3 weeks of vacation right off the bat.
Well, it's even more, I don't know how many lawyers you guys happen to know, but I don't hang out anywhere where all the, I'll say the real lawyers, the guys that charge $900 an hour. I guess they're over at Chicago Cut or someplace. Well, that's not where I'm hanging, but Larissa, I don't know if you know a lot of attorneys, but there's that whole group, which I don't really know anybody. I guess the people who maybe do the copyright stuff for us, there might be in that group. But then if you go to, like, if you're in town, you know, Club Lago's got one of the greatest bars in the city. When I say greatest bars, it's a regular bar. But if you go in there at 5:30, the people you can talk to on that block are all, it's like B office space, kind of like what we're in down here. But there's architects, so you can learn about the new school board building that's going up, and a lot of our attorneys. The difference between, I'll say, an attorney who does mergers and acquisition work, where the world is his oyster, $900,000 an hour, whatever it is, and guys that actually defend people, maybe get paid, maybe don't, and actually are schlumping to 26th Street and Maywood and those kinds of places. The difference there, boy, talk about a K community. It's almost like, you know, traders now, where you're, you know, Griffin's on one part of K and everybody else is on the bottom, and it's happening like in almost every industry. I don't know if it's happening in I don't think it's happening in professorships yet. I hope not. But boy, if you want to see a strata, talk about lawyers, for God's sake. I mean, talk to those people. I'm still going to be defending the same schlubs 30 years from now when half of them aren't paying me as I am now versus some other guy another day, another $1,000 an hour. It's happening kind of all over the place, isn't it, Russell?
But with the lawyers, I'll make a comment about that. They're self-selective. So when you go to law school and then you decide what area of the law you're going to go into, you have a choice of, do you want to be like a patent lawyer where you're doing mostly paperwork, right? And it's going to be very stable, consistent, and it could be, to Russell's point, how many weeks off do you get a year because you're doing something like this? You could be a corporate attorney making substantially more, and again, probably going to be a little more consistent, where versus like an M&A attorney where there are some years where there's lots of M&A activity and you are doing extremely well. Criminal attorneys, you've got family law attorneys. So you self-select of what area you want to go into. It's not like you get your law degree and you get the roulette of, oh, I'm now a criminal attorney and I work for the DA's office making peanuts. Rather, you're in a situation where you make the choice of what phase of the law you want to go into. So you make the decision, really, of how much you're going to make per hour.
Well, I mean, if you don't get hired, but it's interesting how you bring this up. Actually, maybe I brought it up, but you continued it in a more logical manner. It's what can every man afford? Every man can't afford to pay for his wife to have a baby. Nobody. It's well out of your league, right? It's not like when I was born, when the bill was $250, my dad was a policeman, he could pay for it. It might have taken him a month to do it, but he did. You can't afford your legal bill. I mean, as much as I'm not a Trump lover at all, matter of fact, I could be the other side of that, the guy ended up, some people took pot shots at him, and I think he probably was guilty, but still, his legal bill was $40 million. Nobody in this country should have to pay that kind of money to defend yourself. I mean, so you can't, regular person can't afford the legal system. I mean, I you probably know people, or maybe, I don't know, hopefully not. What does an average person have to pay for a decent divorce attorney? I mean, it's absurd amount of money. I mean, nothing really that anybody does now. We talked about houses, cars, attorneys, and doctors. Nobody who's making a normal wage could afford any of that normally, right? I mean, what do divorce attorneys take? 40% of the two people's assets on average, right, before it's over? I mean, it's anywhere you look, the inflation has not worked its way down to the regular person where they can actually afford something. How many people could actually walk into a hospital? Well, only the lady walks in with the baby in her. Where you walk out and the guy writes the check. Name me anybody you know that can do that.
Michael Jordan.
Well, okay. There's there would be one. But I mean, is anybody? I mean, we've done this on the show. We look at this stuff and we go, "How does this stuff like never match? That nobody could afford chemotherapy. Nobody can write a $35,000 check for a treatment. I mean, nobody can afford an attorney at $800 an hour. I mean, how many people can afford anything? They just try and stay out of it. You hope you don't need a new car for $85,000. You hope you can rent someplace or somebody, you know, whatever. I mean, how long can we go like that, I guess, is the question. I don't think too much further, to be honest with you. I'll allow mine in first. Don't both speak at once. What do you think, Russell?
You lost me there. What was it?
How far can we go where 80% of the population can't afford, like, basic stuff?
I'm telling you, man, 1789, French Revolution type stuff. That's the direction that we're going to continue to go if you've got a very small number of people on the high end of the K and everybody on the bottom end of the K. It's going to be the K Revolution of 2031.
Do you think anybody knows how to make a guillotine anymore?
I don't know, and Larissa's going to lead it because she is a blonde ball of fury.
That's right, blonde ball of fury.
Would you be capable of running the guillotine?
Somebody on a podcast referred to her as that. It's like kind of a little inside joke. So
what were you upset about that you became a ball of
fury? She was, and it was a joke. No. She wasn't upset at all. It was like so opposite of who she really is. That's all. So yeah, there, yeah.
We were driving, and Russell is on a podcast. And
I said who I was with, and I don't know. Why did they say you were a blonde ball of fury? Were you aggressively driving?
Yeah, I was going to say you panned over so they could see me. Well, I'm a pretty intense driver.
I'm
like the Wicked Witch of the West, where I'm gripping the steering wheel and kind of like squinting out, and I'm hunched over, and that's where that came out from.
You weren't flipping people off, were you?
Oh no, I'm a defensive driver. It's like I'm not aggressive, I'm not offensive, I'm defensive.
Well, my significant other, let's just say, she never gets in the driver's seat when I'm only under duress because it's nerve wracking. Just saying.
I'm pleading the fifth and not talking about this at all.
Yeah, I mean, let's just say some people are a little more aggressive at it than others.
Yes, they are.
Hey, guys, it was terrific stuff. When are you guys all done with break? When's your schedule?
Well, you know what? This is better than I know where you're going. You want us to be in person. And next month, I will be bringing your favorite Washingtonian in.
Oh, cool.
To the studio. Yeah, she's... She's not with NBC anymore, so she's allowed. She can come on once again, and she's going to be in the Chicago area for between I don't know the end of the semester and when she goes back to work for a new group in early June.
Well, you know, I came very close to bugging you the other night. Chicago had is it Channel 7? Anyway, there's this new meteorologist, this African American guy. He's terrific, and he loves his job, right? They had that massive tornado formation thing up in, like, Gray's Lake and those areas. Not Gray's Lake, Wonder
Lake.
Yeah, and he's on there, and he was absolutely... It was like the guy took 15 Viagra pills. He was orgasmic about this thing. Here's the tail, and here's the back end. And I mean, he was just loving it. And I was learning stuff from him.
Oh, yeah.
I got to call Russell and tell him his daughter's not on the TV. She's got to turn this guy on because she would have loved listening to the guy. The guy really knew his stuff.
We got a strong arm Emmy into coming on and talking about tornadoes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we really got to.
Well,
so,
you know, this dude
we're,
was.
We're gonna get my younger one on at some point.
Did you know that it's the very back end of the formation? The little hook is where you got to watch out for. I didn't know that.
I'm well aware of that.
Really,
like you think the storm is done and it's going to get you.
Oh God. Anyway, thank you guys. Have a great week. SP Futures up 40. NASDAQ 194. Back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.